Before I begin, let me share my joy at returning to Emmanuel in Castleton. Vicki and I are delighted to be here. We arrived in Albany in 1988, so we're in our 26th year of living in the Capital District. We live also in New Jersey, where I work, and Vicki commutes to lower Westchester County. But we have kept a house here close to you. Not in Nassau, not in Brainerd, in East Nassau. The other two are suburbs of East Nassau. Those of you who've been around for a while, we have a beautiful little house on Tassawassa Lake, where we've lived for the last 15 years. So it's a delight to be here today. Dirk shared with me that he has a series going on out of love, self, and God, and others, and stuff. In appropriate ways. And so today, I want to talk a little bit about loving neighbor. And this first story is a story that fascinated me when I was a child. I would look into the story and watch the jar and the jug. I thought it was magic. If I could put myself in the story, I would have peered into that jar and jug day after day, hour after hour, indeed minute after minute, to figure out how in the world the magic happened. No, the meal never came down, the water never came down, the oil never came down. It was replenished day after day after day, and to me, it was magic. When I grew up, became a little more sophisticated in my understanding of this story, and began to focus on the widow and the prophet. And I decided the two of them had come into the story as empty people. The prophet, of course, was thirsty and hungry in the middle of a famine. And so he was directed by God to go to a widow to be fed. Parenthetically, now in my 39th year of ministry, I know exactly where to go when I want to be fed. To widows. This has caused an enormous problem for me over the years. Go and visit, and always you are fed. He's sent to a widow, but this widow is not a local widow. This widow is over the boundary line, over the barrier between Israel and the foreign land. He's to go to Zarephath, which is close to Tyre and Sidon, out there in the middle of nowhere. Indeed, if you follow the line of this story, you discover that Jesus, in his very first sermon, preached about the widow of Zarephath feeding Elijah. Not one of our own widows, but a foreign widow. This almost got Jesus killed. Here it is. Here's the story, and Jesus talks about it. Elijah arrives. The widow says, I'm about ready to eat my last meal. And he says, with enormous audacity, we have a word in the New York area, it's in Yiddish called chutzpah. A lot of chutzpah, huh? It's fine. I understand that you're almost out of food. You just make a little bit for me first. Then you and your son can eat. And I think to myself, incredible. But these two empty people find each other in this story. These neighbors who have never met, these strangers that connect and feed each other. Well, that's a good understanding of this story. But I've come to a third level. So if the first level is magic and the second is miraculous, the third one is they're there. I think moving from class to class as a herd. The third level is mystery. Let me suggest a conversation that may have happened in heaven. God and his choir. God says to the heavenly choir, it's really bad down there. And they say to God, how bad is it? And he said, the famine is so bad that I need to send Elijah to a widow. And they say, where? And God says, I'm going to send Elijah to a widow beyond the boundaries, beyond Israel, in Zarephath. That's how bad the famine is. Now, follow the story. Elijah tops the hill. He's about ready to walk down into Zarephath. Everybody's outside. Middle class folk look like us. Upper class folk look somewhat like us. And they look up on the hill and here is a stranger. And their law of hospitality says they have to feed him. And they're in the middle of a famine. You know where everyone goes? Into their houses. They go into their houses, they lock the doors, they bring down the shades, they pull in the curtains, and they set the alarms. The prophet has come, the stranger has arrived, and they're not going to be placed in an awkward position of being asked to feed him. Who's left? At the city gate, there is the widow. Hasn't moved. She has nothing to lose. She has nothing to give to him. She's gathering sticks to prepare a meal, and Elijah comes down and says to her, could you give me some water? Could you give me a bit of something to eat? And she says to him, I'm about ready to eat my last meal, and then I will die. And he said, don't worry about it. Trust me. Remarkable part of the story. Trust me. Take the meal. Take the cruse of oil. Trust me. It's going to keep coming back day after day. Here is the mysterious interpretation. In the middle of a famine, where do you go to be fed? Go to a hungry person. The Reformed Church in America for years had a program in Chicago. And it was to kind of learn to be an urban pastor or urban church worker. And when you arrived, there was this tradition that the people in the program would give you a dollar and say, okay, you go out on the streets of Chicago and you have to live for the next 48 hours on a dollar. College students, they had to figure it out. And what they figured out over and over again was, if you want to be fed in the middle of a famine, in the middle of a city, you go to those who have nothing. You go to homeless shelters and you go to people on the street who are asking for handouts and you ask them for food. You go to those who have little to lose, for they often are the ones who extend themselves to care for you. This is a story about Mississippi. Some of you were sleeping there. I just woke you up, okay? It's not in the story, but it's a story about Mississippi. Let me explain that. Do you know that Mississippi is the poorest state in the Union? Year after year after year, that is the case. And do you want to guess which state in the United States gives more money to those who are poor and suffering than any other state? Mississippi. Those who understand what it means to be hungry are those who reach out to care for the hungry, those who care for those who are in need. When I was at First Church in Albany, we had a number of widows in our congregation, and I would say to them, where do you go when you get lonely? Who do you talk to? Inevitably, they would say to me, I will find a widow. She will understand. I talk with those who are alcoholics, and we had a number of them sitting in the pews of First Church in the city. And I would say to them, who do you call at 3 o'clock in the morning? You're struggling with the demons. And their response to me was, Pastor, we know that we can call you, but quite frankly, we're a bit embarrassed to do that. We call someone else who has struggled with the demons. We call those who understand. And so this part, this story about loving neighbor comes out at a surprising place. Those who are most vulnerable, those who are most wounded, those who have the least to lose are the ones who often are those who reach out to love neighbor. So, Emmanuel, I have but one question. If God was having a conversation with the heavenly choir today, and God said, there is a famine in the land, they would say, how bad is it? Would God send those who were hungry and struggling in Castleton to Emmanuel? Tough question. For many people, we are the successful ones. We're the ones in the big church. We're the ones with the nice stained glass windows. Often we're the ones who look like we have it all together, although we know better. We know each other. But for those who are outside, this does not look like a very vulnerable place. Not just Emmanuel Castleton, First Albany, Del Mar. We can go church after church after church. And all too often, those who are in need within communities don't come to churches because it looks like they're the ones who have it together rather than they are the ones who understand what the wounds and the pain is about. I quickly go from story to parable. We know the parable. This man is walking down from Jerusalem to Jericho. It's called the Bloody Pass because so many people have gone down and have been mugged and killed on this way. And as he lies half dead next to the road, who walks by on the other side but the Levite and the priest, the religious ones. And then comes the Samaritan, the one who appears to be ethnically impure and religiously questionable. He is the one who stoops down and cares for the neighbor in need. Have you ever imagined what would happen if this Samaritan did the trip the next day, found a person by the side of the road again, and then the next day, and then the next day, and then the next day, week after week? These are the pains and struggles of our neighbors that are not just one time but systemic. Perhaps you've heard the story about the child who lived in a village next to a river. This child one day went down to the river to fish and, much to her amazement, looked out into the river and there was a baby floating down the river. Jumped into the river, she rescued the child, brought it back to the village. People were absolutely shocked. They cared for the baby. Someone adopted the baby. They fed the baby. They clothed the baby. And the next day, the girl was back at the river, and the next day, another baby comes floating down the river. Jumps in, saves the child day after day after day. The babies float down the river, and week after week, the village begins to organize itself. It elects a consistory. This is a reform village. The consistory meets, says, we've got a problem here. So what they did, of course, was they created a group of committees. Now, this comes as a surprise, but this happens occasionally. A committee gets assigned. And there's a committee to build watchtowers so they could sight the babies more quickly as they come down the river. And then there's a committee that was trained to jump into the river and rescue the children. And then there was a committee to set up adoption for all of the children who were coming down the river and came to the village. And then there was a committee to raise money for food and for diapers. And the village was incredibly well organized. Everything was being done decently and in order. The little girl, who's kind of at the side of this gathering, some point raises her hand and says to the village, and the consistory is in the center of things, excuse me, but don't you think we ought to go up the river to find out who's throwing these babies in? Kind of a reasonable suggestion. Where are these babies coming from? Well, the consistory and the committees and the village thought about this, and they decided, while it was a good idea, there really wasn't anyone left to do it because everybody was committed to a committee. So now, day after day, week after week, the village rescues children but doesn't struggle with why there are children floating down the river. Our neighbors surround us, and churches create food pantries. We had one at First Church. We have one at First Church. Create all kinds of ways to assist. But what's more difficult for the church to do is to struggle with, where are these systemic problems coming from? How do we go up the river to struggle with these things? If we're going to love our neighbor, maybe we ought to figure out, if there are so many neighbors in need, what's happening in our community to cause this? So the second question, quite simply, Emmanuel, is this. If there was someone by the side of the road, Emmanuel, stop there. There are the two questions. My friends, you have chosen a beautiful name that gets you in trouble. Your name is Emmanuel. So God says to Jesus, can I send you the vulnerable ones, the weak ones, the hungry ones, the thirsty ones, the guilty ones? As the Emmanuel says, send them to me. God says to Jesus, the Emmanuel, will you stop by the side of the road? Care for those who are in need. The neighbors who seem to struggle day after day, week after week. Jesus, the Emmanuel, responds, I will stop. It's the call of the church. Emmanuel, Castleton. I can only preach this sermon here in Emmanuel. The call of the church. It's difficult. These questions are not easy. But will the church stop? Will the church receive? Will the church follow on the footsteps of a widow and a Samaritan? Amen.